Ugh, seventh grade. It's hard enough. Now imagine you're uprooted from your big suburban middle school and relocated to a depressed rural town in Vermont with a seventh grade of just 11 kids who don't play by the social rules, don't have the latest fashion, or iPhones. Well, maybe what you do is reach for Homer's Odyssey. Now, goddess, child of Zeus, tell the old story from modern times, find the beginning, which is what lead character Caitlin attempts to do in Ali Benjamin's new YA book, The Next Great Polly Fink, in which gods and goddesses are and reality share the stage, and a seventh grader falls from his pedestal. That would be the aforementioned Polly Fink. Ali Benjamin's debut novel was the award-winning The Thing About Jellyfish. Lots of buzz now for The Next Great Polly Fink, and Ali Benjamin joins us in the studio. Welcome.
Thank you for having me.
And we understand that you actually found your seventh grade diaries.
That's true, and it was awful. It was awful.
Did they have a little lock on them?
No, it was a spiral notebook, and the pages were just filled with sort of my chicken scratch handwriting and drawings of unicorns and E.T., and I would write these little sidebars. My life is a soap opera. I didn't look at it for 30 years. And then my mom moved out of my childhood home and I got a box of stuff. And at the bottom of it was this diary that I had kept. And I really thought I was going to recognize myself in those pages. I thought I was going to see things that I remembered. And there was so much about the diary that I didn't recognize. And one of the main things is that I had remembered myself as being a pretty kind kid and kind of a nerdy kid. And the pages are just filled with my angst about where I fit in the social hierarchy and my determination to be popular.
And not as kind of nice a person as you thought you were. And that a little bit of that storyline appears in the new book.
I was not nice at all. The pages are just filled with insults about different kids, some who were my friends, some who I barely knew, my family members, my teachers. There are probably 100 full pages of writing. And in those 100 pages, I don't really have a kind word to say about anybody except whichever kid I happen to have a crush on at the time.
A couple things. First of all, you turn out to be a lovely person because we know
you.
And so the parents take heart with that and young people take heart with that. But also we see this play out in Caitlin, your main character, that she starts to discover, she wasn't exactly as nice as she thought she might have been. But before that, there is this Polly Fink, the mystery man. He's, you know, elevated to God level. And the kids adored him, but he's gone. So they find an old gym bag of his with a stinky T-shirt. It's got the slogan, pick a winner, and a picture of someone picking their nose. Are we in YA territory or what? They make a statue to him. They revere him. He becomes like the Greek gods they're studying in humanities class. Start sentences with, in the name of Polly Fink. What are you saying about what kids do to other kids?
Well, I think I'm also talking about all of us. We have this celebrity culture where we pick people and we elevate them, and we elevate them beyond the ordinary. We turn them into something extraordinary and by nature impossible. And they do this with Polly after he leaves. Polly was kind of a prankster in the class. He was able to pull pranks that were not unkind in nature, but he was very funny and he did a lot of disrupting the rules himself. Mm-hmm. And so they just tell these stories about him and he becomes bigger and bigger and bigger in their minds. And the stories aren't necessarily untrue, but they are selective. They're remembering some things about him. They're not remembering everything about him, which is sort of what we do with celebrities as well and have done with celebrities since the beginning of time.
But the kids are studying, as we said, gods and goddesses. Talk more about, you know, that. You keep tying this into the gods and goddesses and the humanities.
Yeah, so the kids are studying humanities and they're learning about all kinds of things. They're learning about Plato and Plato's allegory of the cave and the idea that what we see around us, what we're perceiving with our senses, with our own individual perspectives, may not reflect the full reality of the world.
Can I just tell you, when I first heard about Plato's cave, this idea that people are sitting in a cave and they're looking at all these figures on the wall across from them and they just sit there and stare at all these shadows on the wall. And it turns out that it's people actually outside the cave running back and forth in front of a fire. They're completely missing life. Well, that's what television is. Plato's That's true. Brilliant.
We see references to Plato's allegory of the cave over and over and over again in society. And because it actually was and continues to be kind of radical, because that idea that the way we are perceiving the world may not be the way it is a really hard thing to understand. The people who are sitting inside the cave with Plato's cave, they're seeing the shadows with their own eyes. Right. They're like, look, no, I see it. That's what it looks like. And they can't really understand that there's a reality that is bigger than their own perception. I find myself thinking about it all the time these days when I listen to conversations either in the political sphere or just anytime you see people who really are unable to step out of their own
cave.
Yeah, their own cave, their own perspective, and perceive that the world might be bigger and more complicated than they themselves can see.
Yeah. Well, so you have that as the young people are realizing maybe everything isn't what they think.
So the kids in the class, Caitlin is in this class where there are only 10 other kids in the class, and they are not very interested in her, understandably, because she's not actually very friendly to them. They're excited about her at first a little bit when they first meet her, and they quickly learn that, well, she's no Polly Fink. She's not much fun. And they start telling these stories about Polly, his best antics, all these different things that he did. And as they're doing this, they're kind of building a legend more than a real person. And after a while, they decide that there's this huge Polly-sized hole in their classroom and they have to fill it. They need somebody to step in and make things interesting because it's not as interesting without him. So they decide to stage a reality TV style competition. And they put Caitlin in charge. They say she's the only objective one. She didn't know him. So she can pick whoever is the winner of this competition. And she takes this job very, very reluctantly. But then she does get into it. The first challenge is a talk like Shakespeare challenge, because that's something that Polly did. Just one day he went around, spoke like Shakespeare to his teachers and his classmates. And so all of the kids have to go home and memorize Shakespeare. They think of Shakespeare as somebody who is sort of stuffy and stodgy. And then they realize that he is just filled with these insults and these sort of great one-liners. And they get really into it.
Well, I'm going to be hurling some of these myself.
Okay.
You fusty nut. You quintessence of dust, my butt. You crusty botch of nature. You dull and muddy mottled rascal. What fun.
It was really fun. I'll say writing it was really fun. I was sitting alone in my office just cracking myself up with some of these.
The principal, Mrs. Gleebus.
Gleebus.
Interrupts lunch to announce classes are canceled because it's zucchini day and all the kids run out except Caitlin, who's like, what? And they start flinging zucchinis. I know that in Aroostook County in Maine, for instance, the kids get off to go pick potatoes. Is this a thing?
Well, I live in far western Massachusetts, and at the end of the summer, there's always way too much zucchini, and there is a town not far from me that does a zucchini festival, and there is, I mean, they paint zucchinis, they bake with zucchinis, there is a zucchini catapult contest, how far can you throw the zucchini? So I put that into the book just because I thought it was such a nice slice of rural life.
We don't want to give away the ending. Just very poignant, very sweet. And you also managed to incorporate the Greek concepts of glory, sacrifice, and catharsis into this surprising ending. Why did you pull on Greek mythology?
I think I was really processing my own education. My education is very much steeped in what we think of as the dead white man canon. And I was trying to figure out what to do with it in this era. I was really thinking about all the voices that we have not heard. While I was writing this, I read Emily Wilson's translation of the Odyssey, and I found it really revelatory. She was seeing things in it that I had never seen in it before. And I thought, I think there's opportunity to reinterpret the ancient world for our modern times. Mm. And that was some of what I was trying to do with this book. It was really my processing of my own education and the things I had learned about as a kid, trying to make them relevant to the world today and to the way I think today.
Yeah. Like having a kid who's elevated to God status tumble from the pedestal but still be a lovelier person in there.
Yeah. One of the last shots of the book, I won't say what it is, but we've sort of stepped away from this celebrity culture where we're elevating one person. And there's a moment that I knew long before I knew how we were going to get the book there. I knew that that was going to be the ending of the book.
Oh, fun. Well, I'm just grateful that there was no dissecting of frogs involved, which is all I remember from seventh grade. Ali Benjamin's new YA novel is The Next Great Polly Fink. Again, her first book, The Thing About Jellyfish, was a National Book Award finalist. So best of luck with this one. Thank you.
Thank you for having me.